I'm very happy to be here this afternoon. Was just said, I will be here talking about my experience as a translator of Quebec judgments into English. And I'll go into specific detail. I'm going to just briefly outline the place where I work and why my job exists. And then I'm going to go into a few examples of actual terminology issues that come up because of the situation in Quebec with the coexistence of the civil law and the common law, and how sometimes the terms will kind of overlap or collide a bit. And hopefully through those illustrations I can show how we attempt to kind of communicate the meaning of the law to a jurisdiction that doesn't share the same legal system. So I'll just begin with a brief background of where I work. It's the Société Québécoise d'Information Juridique, which also goes by its acronym SOQIJ. And as I was introduced, I've been there since 2004, since they created the position of legal translator there. And for those of you who aren't familiar with SOQIJ, it's a Quebec Crown Corporation, or a Société d'État, and it reports to the Ministère de la Justice du Québec, to the Quebec Department of Justice. And its mandate is essentially to promote research and development in the field of legal information and to make it more accessible to the general public. So in simple terms, SOQIJ is like the publishing house for the Department of Justice of Quebec, and it processes and disseminates legal information. And one of its main roles is the publication of judgments of all of the courts and adjudicative tribunals in Quebec. So today, most of its publications are online. There's a database for subscribers that has value-added services like summaries of important decisions, noting up features, and so on. But almost all of the judgments are also available online for free. That's in keeping with its mandate to make the legal information available to the public. But in addition, and more to the point today, all of the translations that we do at SOQIJ are available online for free as well. And that's to further the more specific mandate to make Quebec case law, in particular, more accessible beyond the borders of Quebec. Because I'm sure, as you all know, the vast majority of the judgments rendered in Quebec are written in French. And before SOQIJ got into the translation business, only a few were ever really translated into English. The majority of them were requested by the parties, because they are entitled to a translation of their judgment under the Charter of the French Language, a translation of the judgment in their case. But of course, these were never prepared for publication, so they were very rarely made available to the general public. A party can certainly translate their own case and publish it on their own website, for example, but again, that's a very rare occurrence. And once in a while, I suppose maybe more than once in a while, but occasionally law reports will have a Quebec judgment translated for publication. But the effort and expense means that it occurs relatively infrequently. So before SOQIJ began translating judgments, very few were produced, very few were made generally available, and this created a real imbalance in the dissemination of case law from different parts of Canada throughout the country. Because I'm going to generalize a little bit, and I hope I'm not offending anyone, but I think it's safe to say that jurists in Quebec, for the most part, are bilingual, and they'll frequently consult and cite case law from all over Canada. But that many jurists outside Quebec don't read French as easily, and as a result, there didn't seem to be a lot of, let's say there was no reflex on the part of judges outside of Quebec to consult Quebec case law. So that meant that sometimes important decisions rendered in Quebec in cases that were relevant across Canada that had to do with public law or criminal law, they were either ignored by other provinces, by the courts of other provinces, or the actual case stating the law wasn't consulted directly. So as a result, Quebec's contribution to the development of the law in the country as a whole suffered, and by the same token, the law in other Canadian provinces didn't benefit from any insights from the Quebec judges. And the Court of Appeal of Quebec observed this, and in 2003, Chief Justice Robert publicly expressed his intention to promote a broader dissemination of Quebec judgments. And so over the next year, it became a reality. The Court of Appeal of Quebec, the Minister of Justice of Quebec, and SOQIJ, where I work, entered into an agreement, and SOQIJ created the position of legal translator. And then by 2004, in June, Sahij was in the translation business, and I had a job. So that was good. And then we began by translating judgments of the Court of Appeal only, and they remain our primary focus today. But in 2005, we also entered into an agreement with the Court of Quebec, and then in 2006, with the Superior Court of Quebec. So we continue to translate and publish selected judgments from those courts as well. I'm just going to go on and say a few words about our procedure, which is actually quite simple, since the translation team at Sahij is pretty small. In fact, between 2004 and 2010, it was one person, myself, with, of course, the support of my supervisors at Sahij and the judges and, of course, the research staff at the courts, which has been invaluable. But in 2010, we benefited from a grant from the federal government, basically the Department of Justice of Canada, to hire another translator who's solely dedicated to translating Court of Appeal judgments. And so almost exactly a year ago today, in fact, Marie-Josée Robert, who's over there, she started working at Sahij. So now we actually have a team of translators. Obviously, a team of two can't translate all of the judgments that are rendered in Quebec. So there has to be some kind of selection process, obviously. And, of course, not all judgments are relevant for translation either. So the selection process takes place in collaboration with the courts, and they ultimately have the final word on which judgments are to be translated. Judgments are selected on the basis of their relevance across Canada, so essentially the area of law that they're dealing with. On some occasions, however, they will be selected because of their newsworthiness. I'm thinking in particular of the so-called Lola case, if anyone's here is familiar with it, right? It was a case about a payment of support to former life partners who were never married. And whereas in the rest of Canada, the other provinces recognize what's known as common law spouses, but in the Quebec Civil Code, there isn't any such recognition. So technically, the law in that judgment really applied only to Quebec, but it's a matter of interest across the country, I guess, for just the general public, so we were asked to translate that one as well. So every translation that we do at Sahij undergoes revision at Sahij first, and then after that we submit it to the court that rendered it for final revision, correction, and approval. So the courts are directly involved in the translation process. So, for example, at the Court of Appeal, an Anglophone judge will review our work and make any corrections or changes that he or she deems to be necessary. And then the judge who wrote the decision will also sign off on our version of it. And then it's only once the court's revisions have been incorporated or the translation approved that the final version will appear on Sahij's website. So moving from procedure to talk a little bit about the strategy of translation that we adopt. As you can imagine, it's a little more complex than procedure. I really won't, because I don't have time or the ability really to get into a theoretical discussion of the kind of approach that we should take. But I will talk a little bit about what we do. And I think that the most important motivation for translating the judgments essentially is to transfer the legal meaning. I mean, that's the point, right? We want to contribute the insights that are in Quebec judgments to the law in the rest of Canada. So it's very important that we get that meaning across to jurists who live in other jurisdictions. So it does mean that we have to follow the source text quite closely. But of course, as any translator here knows, we can't be a slave to the source text either, and that remains true in translation of judgments. So we have to adopt a strategy that effectively conveys the legal meaning of our source text to our target reader. And in the case of the translations at Sahij, our intent being to disseminate Quebec case law beyond our borders to the rest of Canada, then our intended target readers are primarily members of the legal community outside Quebec. And so this means that we're making two assumptions about our target readers. First, we assume that they're lecteur averti, they're informed, they're initiated, they're familiar with special purpose language of the law. So that means that we expect them to understand certain conventions of judgments and also to be open to meanings that might not be apparent to a layperson, for example. And there's another assumption that we make, because within the language of the law, there are also subcategories that each legal system will constitute on its own. So each one of these legal systems has its own internal logic, as we know, and its own terms and concepts, and they don't always line up with the other ones. So our second assumption is that while our readers might be fluent in the law as practiced in Ontario or BC, British Columbia, or, for example, they might not have quite as firm a grasp on the language of our subcategory, which is, of course, Quebec law, which, of course, has its own unique characteristics because of the coexistence of the civil law and the common law. That doesn't mean that we have to coddle the readers or that we unthinkingly translate anything that looks like the civil law into the common law, because that is neither desirable nor possible. For example, in the Lola case that I mentioned earlier, it's a civil law case entirely, but we certainly wouldn't translate a concept such as the lack of an obligation of support between former de facto spouses, which is expressed in a very civil law way. We wouldn't translate it into terms that are used in the common law. I mean, it would be possible to more or less do so, but we wouldn't do that because it would actually distort the law as it exists here. So we would use the English civil law terms that exist already. But at the same time, we still have to remain aware that there's a hybrid nature, that we're using terms sometimes when we're talking about the civil law or when we're talking about the law in general, that actually have different meanings in French and in English and actually have different meanings in Quebec and the rest of Canada. Sometimes an area of law can be distinct and we describe it from a purely common law, purely civil law perspective, and there's no real collision of language, but sometimes they do. And this leads us to our most interesting challenges, really, as translators, especially as translators of Quebec judgments. And I'm going to move on to give you a few examples, just a couple of examples. I'm cutting it down a little bit because I know in the interest of time. I'm going to go into some detail, though, just to... I hope you don't think I'm talking down to you, because I'm sure you all understand the kind of process that goes into this kind of choice. But I wanted to illustrate, really, the kind of thought process that's behind the choices that we make when we translate judgments in Quebec. I'm just going to give you two examples. The first one is the term jurisprudence, which, as I'm sure you're aware, has a cognate in English, jurisprudence, but it's not necessarily a straightforward equivalence because if you consider it from an English perspective, the language of English, it's actually kind of a false frame, the faux ami. If in French the term generally denotes case law or decided law, but in English, the primary meaning is, of course, the study of law or the philosophy of law. But it does, in some circumstances, mean case law, but it's like one of its secondary meanings. But in Quebec, it almost always means case law. So we really have to be aware of that, or at least I really have to be aware of that when I'm translating a judgment, that it doesn't actually mean case law all over the country, or at least to most jurists, it doesn't. And there's a really good reason that jurisprudence is used in English in Quebec to designate case law. It's actually, there is an objection to using case law to describe jurisprudence if you're talking about the civil law, because technically speaking, if you say case law, that means that the case makes the law, but of course in the civil law, that's not one of the features. The case doesn't make the law. So there is actually a reason that we use the term jurisprudence. And it's not something that we should dismiss lightly either, because we do want to remain true to the nature of the law as it exists. But in the context of the civil law of Quebec, and in the context of the cases that are translated for use outside Quebec, I would say that actually that point's not as forceful as that, simply because Quebec's a hybrid system. And it does accept that judicial decisions aren't simply applications of the law, but that they can actually make law, being part of Canada and part of the system the way it's applied here. Also, if we use the term jurisprudence in another jurisdiction and it's misunderstood, that could be an issue. Also, if our objection to it is that it's not completely in line with the meaning of the term jurisprudence in French, that would also be a point that would be lost on our target readers. So it really would be a little going a little too far to maintain the word jurisprudence. So as a result, I tend to avoid using case law altogether, jurisprudence altogether. The second example, I'm going to go into a bit more detail just because there are different possible solutions to it. It's the term bon père de famille, which of course is a very civil law term. And of course, it draws on a very outdated stereotype. To a civilian, it's very clear. It was derived from the Roman law term bonus pater familias, and I'm sorry for my Roman, my Latin pronunciation. It appeared in a number of articles in the Civil Code of Lower Canada. So for over a century in Quebec, it was the term that was used to refer to a duty of care by which the defendant's conduct was measured in certain situations. But since 1991, with the publication of the Civil Code of Quebec, which does not contain that term, the term has fallen very much out of use, and it's because jurists are no longer locked into using it because it's no longer in the code. And for the most part, it's been replaced by the more modern personne raisonnable et diligente. But bon père de famille actually still is occasionally used in judgments. Even recently, in fact, about 2 months ago, I translated a judgment in which it actually was used. So in a case like that, there are a few different solutions. The first one, there are some very cogent arguments to argue that the term reasonable person is a very satisfactory equivalent. First argument, it is also a concept in the common law, so readers outside Quebec are sure to be familiar with it. And the concepts are also essentially the same in the common law and the civil law, so there really wouldn't be any loss of meaning. It's also an evolution from the more sexist and outdated term reasonable man. And the fourth argument is that it also resembles the term more currently used in the civil law to refer to the same standard of conduct. But there could also be some arguments against using reasonable person if a judge chooses to use bon père de famille, because if a judge is choosing to use it in 2011, and there's got to be a reason. He's got to be harking back to a more explicitly civilian standard, or to its Roman lineage, or there's some reason that's connected to the civil code. So the use of the term that is closely associated with the common law in such a case would pretty much erase that reference. So it's really up to the translator in a position like that to judge whether the reference to the civil law in the judgment is really that important, and if the legal meaning would suffer if the reference to the civil law source of that standard would be removed. So again, it's the translator making some kind of interpretation of the meaning of the term in the judgment. If the translator finds that it actually would cause a problem to convey the legal meaning, then we'd have to look to a second option, which would be the term prudent administrator, which was the English equivalent of the term in the Civil Code of Lower Canada. And again, it's a definite possibility, but there are certain caveats. The bon père de famille standard can be used in many different situations to determine if a duty of care has been breached. And its scope is quite broad, and it's analogous to the common law reasonable person standard. Prudent administrator, though, is defined as being a bit narrower in scope, and specifically it refers to the duty of care and patrimonial matters only. So in some contexts, it's perfectly acceptable. In fact, in the judgment that I translated, that was what we eventually decided. There was a bit of input from the judges. And in that case concerned the liability of a municipality with regard to issuing permits, and the trial judgment had said that the municipality's obligation was to act en bon père de famille. So in that case, it did seem as though prudent administrator would be appropriate. But there are cases where, of course, bon père de famille is a deliberate reference to civil law, but the notion is broader, so we can't use prudent administrator, and we would lose the civil law reference if we use reasonable person. So then, where are we left with? The only other option would be to use bon père de famille in French in the English text, which is actually what some Quebec and Supreme Court judges have done in the past when writing a judgment in English. And certainly, using the term in French remains true to the civilian framework, to the civilian source. But again, it's really only acceptable where the civil law notion is the salient point and prudent administrator is not an option. Because if a reader outside Quebec is reading the Turnbull Pas de Famille and is not familiar with the Civil Code of Lower Canada, which is no longer even enforced, they would probably understand that it's some kind of legal fiction. They would probably understand the words. And they could probably figure out with a little bit of research what it means, but the historical weight that the term carries in the civil law would probably be lost on them. And they might even find the term a little bit jarring. So again, the translator has to really determine that from the context in which it's used. And so personally, I would, in a situation like that, go back to the first option and look at reasonable person, because it is really much closer to what is used in the Quebec civil law at the moment. If it's really, really, really not possible to do that for whatever reason, there's the fourth alternative where you can use what's called, of course, a lexical expansion, or you can explain it. Basically, you can provide a parenthetical explanation after the term to clarify. That's not, of course, the most elegant solution, but it does preserve the legal meaning, which is our priority. So I've tried to illustrate an important point with these examples, which is basically that law and legal language are system-bound. They really are connected to the history and the culture of the legal system. And in fact, some people have argued that because each system is so rooted in its own history and culture, that legal translation is actually impossible. That means, that is to say, that it's impossible to convey the precise meaning of a source legal text in a different language to a different legal culture. Speaking from my own experience, I acknowledge the challenges. I don't know if it's impossible. I can't really afford to think that way because I have some translations to do. But I think I've illustrated a little bit how the transfer of legal meaning in the judgments can sometimes require a sacrifice.